NASF, which stands for the North Atlantic Salmon Fund. But during the winter time, I studied here in the school international marketing. And during the summertime, I try and spend as much time outside as I possibly can. Summers are short, so you kind of have to use the most of your time being outside. But yeah, like I mentioned, I am a volunteer for an organization called NASF, which is an international volunteer organization. And what we do is that we're trying to protect the wild salmon in the North Atlantic Basin. And you might ask yourself, why do we need to protect the wild salmon here? Well, in Iceland we have a really specific type of fish here, the North Atlantic salmon. It's such a unique creature. And like you have seen, the island is pretty small, so we only have around 50,000 adult fish running the rivers each year. And you can find those fish in, I think, just under 200 rivers. And in each river, there's a certain population that has adapted to that river for thousands of years. I mean, the salmon have been here way longer than us humans. And when I say that it has adapted to each river, it's actually quite amazing. And a good example of that is that during the summertime, I spent a lot of time up north to my uncle's farm. Just by the farm, there's a big river. Pretty big, yes, and it's flat. It doesn't have a lot of current. But a little bit further upstream, there's a tributary that comes in that is completely different. It's small, it's really fast flowing water, a lot of waterfalls and rapids. And if you catch a fish down in the main river, close to the estuary, for example, you can tell which river the fish is from. If you catch a fish from the main river, slow flowing, it's a little bit shorter, it's more compact and fat. The fish that belong in the small, fast flowing water, they're much thinner because they have to adapt to going up the waterfalls and swimming along a hard distance as well. So we have a pretty unique population of fish here. And we are trying to protect that as best as we can. And one thing that we do is that for 20 years now, we've been buying fishing quotas and licenses from commercial fisheries in both Greenland and the Faroe Islands. The reason why we do that is because even though the fish come up the rivers here and spawn, when the juveniles are about 4 or 5 years old, they travel back to the ocean to eat, and they'll stay there for 1 to 2 years. And when they're in the ocean, they tend to go off the coast of Greenland and the Faroe Islands. And the old commercial fishing boats there, they used to drop nets in the ocean and catch a lot of fish. And the problem with that is that by catching, let's say, 1,000 fish in the nets, we could have wiped out an entire river population. So we've been buying the fishing quotas and licenses there for, yeah, just over 20 years now.
So you buy them when they can't, and then they can't fish there?
Yeah, so we're both just buying the quotas straight off them, but we're also spending quite a lot of money to find other, you know, fish species that they can fish that are more sustainable, for example, cod and other fish like that, haddock. So we're trying to help them find new sources of fishing, not just getting them taking their jobs. Another thing that we're doing here in Iceland is that we are trying to protect their habitat, because the salmon here, they need a specific temperature of the water to be able to spawn, a specific type of gravel as well. So every time that people are thinking about putting down a new road close to a river, dam, a bridge, we are trying to find that they would always have an environmental assessment done. Because one bridge can ruin a whole spawning ground. As well as that, farmers here in Iceland, they have been putting nets in their rivers for hundreds of years as well. So it's a habit, and we're trying to buy some netting rights off those farmers in rivers that the population have been reducing for a few years. And the thing about netting with the farmers is it's kind of a habit. 100 years ago, farmers would do it for food, and they would eat salmon 5, 6 times a week during the summer months. But today, it's a different story. Some of them sell the fish to supermarkets, but a lot of them actually just put them in the freezer and they get left there for, you know, a couple of years even, so that they would have to be thrown out, which is not good. So that is kind of what we're doing here in Iceland. But now there's a new danger that's facing us that's probably the biggest danger that we've had, and that is salmon farming in open net pens. When I say open net pens, that is one method of farming salmon. An open net pen is kind of a net in the ocean, so germs and water can pass through it, and it's holding fish by just one layer of net. And there are a couple of other methods that you can farm salmon here. You can use what's called closed containment, which is kind of just a steel frame in the ocean. And then you pump, you know, the cold water from the bottom up, and it's more circulating water, and it's a better method of growing the fish. And then you can also have land-based farms, where you can use fresh water, circle that around a few times, you can use the water again and again. And you also don't have the problems that you do when you're having it in open net pens. There are probably three big problems that we have with that. First of all, it's sea lice. Sea lice is actually a natural thing with salmon. If you catch a wild salmon, they would usually have sea lice on them. Sea lice, they attach to it and they feed up their blood. But usually a wild fish has between like 2 and 10 lice on them. And when they run up the fresh water, the lice die off in a couple of days. So it doesn't harm them. You can't even see when the lice fall off. You can't see any wounds or anything. But when you have salmon farming in open net pens, you have a huge amount of salmon, farmed salmon there at one time. Like I mentioned before, we have around 50,000 wild fish here. We have 14 million farmed salmon in pens around Iceland. And that's just 1/3 of the plan. So it's a huge difference between 50,000 and 14 million. But when you have 14 million fish in a couple of big farms here, it's a breeding ground for those sea lice. And they can harm the adult fish. They can, it's kind of, when you see badly wounded fish from sea lice, it's kind of flesh wounds really deep. And it kills a lot of fish here in farms. But the biggest problem with the sea lice is that the juvenile wild salmon, when they run out to the ocean, they have to pass through those farms. And it only takes maybe 4 or 5 sea lice to kill them. So that's a big problem for us. As well as that, when you have sea lice problems here in Iceland, it usually happens in the summertime when the ocean is a little bit warmer than usual. And the only thing they can do to maintain the lice at a certain number is use poison and antibiotics. Which is not good for the fish, it's not good for the bottom of the ocean, the creatures that live there. And that brings up another problem with fish farming in open net pens, and that is pollution. Let's say I want to buy an apartment in Reykjavik, I would have to pay a certain discharge fee. But the salmon farmers don't have to. Even though scientists have proven that the salmon farming here in Iceland probably has as much pollution and discharge as the whole of Reykjavik. But they don't have to pay any discharge fees, which is kind of strange. Yeah. But the third problem we have with open net pens is genetic mixing. Because, like the name suggests, it's open pens. So it doesn't take much for a hole to poke through the net and a lot of fish to escape. The thing is that we've had quite a few escapes here in Iceland, and the guys that own the salmon farms, they suggested that fish, they wouldn't travel anywhere. Because the salmon, they're Norwegian, they're not Icelandic even. And they're bred to be fast growers, be fast. So they suggested, like, yeah, I mean, if they would escape, they would just swim in circles until they die. Which was wrong. And one of the problems is that when there's an escape, the salmon farmers have to, respond, and they have to try and, you know, have the damage as low as possible. And many times there has been an escape, and they would say, yeah, we've got everything under control. We don't think a lot of fish escaped, maybe 40, 50 fish, but everything's under control now. So they have given the government the number 40 to 50 fish have escaped. And one time in the autumn, a couple of months later after the escape, the locals there caught around 400 farmed salmon just in one river in the bottom of that fjord. And then we thought, yeah, maybe it's true, but like maybe they don't travel that far, the escaped farmed salmon. I mean, because there were a lot of them there in the fjord. We have caught farmed salmon in, you know, beautiful rivers up to 300 miles away from the pens. So, I mean, they can travel quite far. And like I mentioned before, like every population adapts to its home river. It adapts how much the current is, the temperature they have to survive. So by having one farmed salmon come in and spawn with the rest of the wild fish, you can totally screw things up and kill off the whole population. And in the West Fjords, we have really small rivers, and the populations there are probably around 20 to 50 fish in each river. And we had quite a strong population of Arctic char and sea trout as well. But the Arctic char and the sea trout, they have been decimated. There are almost none left. And that's mainly because of the sea lice that killed them on their way to the rivers.
So the farmed salmon problem, that is the sea lice and contaminants, goes at the sea lice. I mean, the genetics are going to change with the farmed salmon. Is that part of it, or is the genetics the same? That's just
yeah, the genetics of the farmed salmon are the same. But the thing is that when you have farmed salmon, you can kind of control how they're bred and how the genetics of those fish are. And instead of having, first and foremost, the fish in the farms here Icelandic, they chose to have it Norwegian because the owners of the farms here are Norwegian that have farms in Norway. So it was easier for them just to use the same fish. And also some of the fish, they can be infertile, which is a little bit more expensive. So these fish were fertile that are put in the pots here. So, you know, by having those two examples of a Norwegian fish that is fertile and they can run the rivers, you're putting everything in danger. And it's just about a few bucks that they have to lose in profit by, you know, breeding the fish in a certain way that wouldn't, you know, concern us with genetic mixing. But like most of all, it's all about profit for these guys. And the weird thing is, here in Iceland, like mentioned, the majority owners are Norwegians that have farms in Norway. The thing in Norway, salmon farming has been there for probably 30, 40 years, much longer than it has here. And the problems that I'm talking to you about, they've all happened there. They've had genetic mixing. They've had populations totally wiped out because of sea lice and because of pollution and all that. So now in Norway, if you own a company and you want to start a salmon farm, there would be incentives for you to put it up on land or in close containment for sustainability. But here in Iceland, they don't have to pay almost anything. They just have it in open net pens, getting more profit. But the weird thing is that those companies, they haven't shown a profit here in Iceland for the last 40 years. You ask yourself, like, how is that possible? But the thing is that with these Norwegian owners, they are moving the majority of the money out of Iceland to Norway. They do that by making it seem like the money that, you know, Icelandic farm companies spend on leasing equipment is so expensive because they're just leasing their own equipment. So there's not a lot of profit coming into the Icelandic society. But it, like I mentioned, the farms are in the West Fjords and the East Fjords. And those are two places where the population of people have been going steadily down for tens of years, maybe 40, 50 years. So there's not a lot of jobs there for people either. So the salmon farmers, and I have to give them credit for that, they're kind of smart guys. They've painted R5 as a picture of a few guys here in Reykjavik wearing suits against the locals in the West Coast, that we don't want them to have jobs, that we don't want them to survive there either. But we haven't, you know, we don't have anything against salmon. I think salmon farming is actually an okay thing, but you have to have it sustainable. You have to have it not harming the nature around it. And here in Iceland, it's a perfect place to have it sustainable. We have a lot of renewable energy. We have a lot of fresh water. It's a perfect place to have it up on land. And that would generate just as many jobs as it would in the open net pens. But like I mentioned, it's pretty much all about profit. And the salmon farming companies, they have a lot of funding and they have a lot of connections. So for us, a few volunteers in Reykjavik and around the island, it's quite tricky to fight them. For example, the parliament here, Alfini, a former president of the parliament, is now working for the salmon farmers. He's their main guy. So he has all the connections, he has all the inside news. And so it's a tough situation for us. And a good example of how smart they are is that we were gathering funding for probably a couple of years to make a documentary about the situation here, which we thought was a smart idea to do, because everything that we were talking about happens underneath the surface. People that are driving the roads and whatnot, they can't see what's happening. So we made the documentary, which was really good, and it was broadcasted in the main television station in Iceland. The day after it was broadcasted, the salmon farmers, they had a free newspaper delivered to every home in Iceland, where they were talking about all the good things that they're doing and all the things that we were mentioning that could happen that hadn't been proved to happen here, even though it had been proved everywhere else. They were saying that's a bunch of lies, like we haven't had huge escapes and we haven't had this and that. So they were quick to respond to our method of trying to get people to take notice. So it's a tricky situation.
Yeah. Since the farms have been going in Norway for much longer and they did notice the same problems, has Norway done anything about, they've pretty much, have they done anything to correct, do they have more farms on land than in the water?
Yeah.
So, you can point to that as
exactly.
As an example of what we need to do.
Yeah. Exactly. In Norway now, I think there haven't been a new open net pen for 5 or 6 years. Everything is closed containment or up on land. And the good thing about that as well is, like, if you have it in closed containment or up on land, you can control the current so you can make the fish exercise. You would have a little bit leaner meat, which is better for sales as well. Because here, the food that they're giving these fish, it's not really food. They have a lot of dye in it to make the flesh seem much more healthy than it is. And the fat that they have, it isn't the omega acid that they say it is. So, but like here in Iceland, it's such a new problem. Scientists here haven't really proven a lot of things that haven't proven elsewhere. So we're trying to fight for that as well, and we're trying to fight for more regulatory systems to be in place. There was just one guy working in Reykjavik that was supposed to regulate the whole island, in the Westfjords and the Eastfjords. One guy. So we were fighting for that, and that was, the politician said, yeah, I think you're right, we have to change things up. But the thing that how it changed was, now the salmon farmers themselves have to regulate. So they have to themselves once a month say if everything's okay and if they have a lice problem or anything like that. So it doesn't really matter to us that much.
Farm salmon chipped fried bees? So
they're not chipped, but they are. They put them into certain liquids so they can tell exactly from what pod they are or pen. So when we catch farm salmon in a river, we can actually, take it to the scientists and they can say, like, yeah, it was raised in this exact pen.
Okay.
And then, a lot of the fish that we've been catching, the farm fish, they're from pens that haven't been registered as an escape there.
Yeah.
It seems that doesn't make sense.
So, is there any fines?
There are fines, but they are really low.
Okay.
Really low compared
to...
They are paid in the end somehow, but like I mentioned, like the regulatory system, it isn't good enough to, make sure that everything's paid, and so it's just tough.
So they're regulating themselves, so they don't charge themselves too much.
Exactly. And here in Iceland, salmon fishing is a big part of our culture, and we have some of the best salmon rivers in the world. And it costs a lot of money to fish salmon here. A lot of people pay up to $5,000-$6,000 per day. And almost everything is catch and release as well. So we're trying to protect the rivers that way. And the majority, or all the money, goes to farmers that live by the rivers that lease out the rights to salmon fishing. And the thing is, it's such a huge amount of income from that for them. For example, in the East, around 45% of the annual income of farmers comes from leasing salmon fishing rights. And the same is in the West. It's a huge amount of the income that comes from leasing salmon rivers. So they have told us, like, we have to, you know, fight this, because if our rivers would be ruined in any way, we would have to move away. We couldn't farm anymore. And these are generations of farmers that would have to move away because they aren't getting the money for the rivers.
Can you tell us about the antibiotics and the research on humans?
So there have been researches in Norway. The thing that they do is they're always changing the antibiotics they use. They're using a new antibiotic that's a little bit different, maybe every other year. So you would always need new research and all that. Here in Iceland, I think they haven't done any research on the meat of the farmed salmon, except like, yeah, you get this much protein and you get this much fat, but nothing about like dangers and all the toxic stuff that's in it. So we're trying to fight for that as well, to have some government institute to do research on that for the people. So I think in Iceland we have had salmon farms in open accounts for 8 to 9 years. In Norway it's about 35. So, and also they have a lot more farms, a lot more land. So they have the experience. And that's what we're trying to learn from. But it's, you know, it's a weird situation that you have 35, 40 years of experience in Norway, and you've come to the conclusion that open accounts is not safe. And then the same owners just go to another country close by and do the same thing here, and everything's allowed, and it doesn't cost them much money.
Yeah, it's happening in other countries. Yeah, exactly. But it's
unethical. It is.
So
and it's, and Iceland in general, we're quite, you know, for sustainability, and even though it's renewable energy resources and everything here. So it's weird that the government isn't paying closer attention to the thing that this is now, you know, almost banned in Norway. We're doing it here for a small price to pay for the fish farmers, but a huge price for nature and farmers and everybody, I guess.
Something smells fish.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
Yeah.
You mentioned talking about the fishing on land versus the farm at sea. Difference in the quality of the fish, difference in the size of the fish, or because I'm assuming it's only freshwater that's used on the farm and on land.
Yeah, it is actually, because you can control more how fresh the water is by having fresh water. As well, it seems like they burn more fat in fresh water somehow. But there are some land-based farms that use seawater as well. But here in Iceland, it just makes sense to use freshwater because it's, I guess, a better product. It sells for a higher price.
Freshwater?
Yeah, raised in freshwater. Yeah.
But they're also small, again.
They are quite similar, I guess. Because there you can have the same breed of fish that's actually bred to be fat. If you make them exercise, you actually burn fat for their fast growers as well.
Less mercury in the farm fish? Is there not eating the wild food?
No, there's a lot of mercury in as well. It's food that they're
eating.
Yeah.
Thank you.
maybe in some way. But I'm not an expert on how they're raising the fish in those in the farms, but I guess, you know, I think the main thing is to have everything as sustainable and as little discharge as possible. I think some of the farms here, like we have a farm up on the Reykjanes Peninsula where they're growing cold salmon on that, and also char, they seem to use fresh water rather than seawater for some reason. I'm not scientifically sure why that is, but they say that they grow faster that way, which I'm not sure why. Good point you bring up, because, like I mentioned, there are three of us that are volunteering for this organization. There's so much things to do. We are controlling the things that are happening in Greenland and the Faroe Islands and the netting rights and trying to get the public to know what's happening underneath the surface of the farms. So we just haven't got the manpower, I guess, to start, bringing in new ideas. Whoever you want, that actually knows what's happening, and that is not on their payroll.